I'd like to make a few comments to wrap this retreat, wrap it up. The first thing to say is that although this is a theme-based retreat, the theme really has been something about the difficult memory, which is sometimes individual memory and certainly a group memory, and how to handle it, how to work with it, how to bring life to the scars. So in a way it was simply bringing up the Holocaust memory as a source of pain or a source of difficulty. But this is very much in the tradition of the Dharma, and that the Dharma really begins there, which is where for us is a source of pain or difficulty. Because the Dharma is a spiritual journey which doesn't start from everything is bliss and light and freedom and all we have to do is float off into the sunset. It's not a new age. It's really about, it starts there. It goes on to the bliss and the freedom of floating off into the sunset. Of course. But it starts with a reality rather than with a fantasy. And therefore that to me is one of its gifts, that it doesn't start from escape. It starts from confrontation with where we really are. When I mean we, I mean all of us here, but I mean also the animals and the trees and all the people, because this is the mystery of embodiment. We are embodied into life. We are dropped into a body, and here we are. And so our experience is one of often or always, wow, I got dropped body, but why do I have to go through this samsara? So it's important to understand that the Dharma is the basis of what we're doing here, and the example of, if you like, a center of pain or an example of pain is just an example. This is not a group to discuss the Holocaust. This is not a retreat about how to feel better about where we are. It's not a retreat where you have to pay attention to the Holocaust. And those of you who didn't feel it touched them particularly, it has no importance whatsoever whether it touches or it doesn't touch. It was just an opportunity for pain to arise, to be honest about it. But if it any of you who felt it really didn't, it's not an issue for me at all, it's absolutely fine. And it really is the same, and it will be the same retreat for cancer patients, for whose issue of being dropped into a body in samsara is the difficulty of dealing with a chronic disease that is threatening life. And it will be no different. The way we do it might be different. The techniques would be different. But not so different. But the basis would be the same. The groups we have in the prisons, same. It doesn't really matter where we're coming from. The opportunity for liberation is in the heart of the human experience. And in that heart, we meet difficulty and we go through it. And when we meet difficulty of being embodied as a human being and go through it, this is the journey of liberation, never mind what the experience is of each of us. And so in a sense I want to just bring it in that perspective, because it's very important to understand this is not a retreat on the Holocaust. This is a retreat on Dharma. And Dharma can be applied like a light that shines on any aspect of human experience and lights it up and reveals our innate freedom behind the stories. And a lot of it is about helping to shift the view, that the view is different from the view of having to cope with all the demons that turn up, to allowing them to be seen for what they are, which is stories in our own mind, and to see them dressed up in demon clothes, but they're just stories that want our love and attention, that are dressed up in demon clothes. That's all the demons of our life, as Rilke said so beautifully. Nevertheless, we did learn that we have to, it's wise to learn methods for this, it's wise to learn teachings, thousands of years of teachings. Mindfulness is a wise way. And the nutritional attitude, the attitude of kindness, of feeding what's good, is a wise way that we can learn. And it's retreat itself is a wise thing to do, because it's a difficult task and we need all the help we can get. And sometimes when maybe some of you thought, well, I feel like talking, I don't want all this silence, it's too much, this silence, and I want to chat and I want to be free. But wait, we're learning a method, we're learning a wise way of being able to approach. We talk all our life, chatting the whole life, chatting, busy, engaged. Wait a minute, stop. And there's a wisdom in that, because otherwise we're caught round and round and round and round. So the silence here was important, to be able to see that the demons of our life are just angels dressed up in demon clothes, that we see them when we look carefully. And it is not so easy. It's not so easy to break our experience down into its elements, to see a thought as a thought, rather than a chain of thinking that tells me I'm guilty of something. It's not. A guilty thought is just a thought that comes and goes, and it's gone. And there is no guilt. There is a thought that carries a message, and it's gone. So for that, to break our experience into its elements and see it clearly, is not so easy. And that's why we go to retreat. That's why we need the silence. That's why we need hour after hour, or year after year of sitting. It works. It works very beautifully. But it does need the effort, and that's what we've been doing. And underneath, the view is that we change the subject, not the object. The subject here, the object is our life experience. We cannot control it. It brings us what it brings us. And I think this is a very big message that many of us have learned here. We can't repair the past. We can't control the group karma that there was. This big group karma of the Holocaust. We can't change that. We can't change the way our childhood has been shaped by this. We can't rewrite all of that. But we can change the subject. not the object. We can change the one that hears, the one that sees, the one that receives, the one that knows. This one. And everything becomes entirely fluid and flexible and dynamic, and then we're not holding anything that oppresses us. If we see it clearly and deeply, with the perspective of life, and not the perspective of what I have to carry. So the practice has to continue. If we want to continue on the journey to freedom, then we do need to pay attention to what we're going to do now that we leave the retreat. And the first thing is, as everything flows, so does this retreat. So it comes and it goes. And we can't hold on. And we shouldn't expect to hold on. But this retreat, with its silence and practice, created certain conditions and certain experiences. When we go out into the street, we go out into our life, there's other conditions with other experiences. So we have to allow that natural process to happen. So please don't have too many expectations that you can hold on to what happened here, there. Because that's just expectations. Right? But something clearly has and may have settled into us in changing the view. And that shift, will may be subtle, in changing the view, stays with us. And we may not know it, that it's there. It's one of these really kind of interesting paradoxes, that the self, the me here, thinks it's in charge of everything, and thinks it knows how it is. The self thinks it knows how is the self. So the self is trying to measure, how am I now? Right? And the self will say, oh, I'm back to ordinary life and everything is gone. Who's saying that? The self is trying to measure itself. And it can't do it. It's an extremely unreliable judge. We know that because the self is all the time trying to judge ourselves and makes a bad job out of it. The narrative, the message, for example, I'm no good, is a total fiction. That the self is measuring itself and saying, I'm no good. But it's a total construction, it's not the truth. The self can't be relied on to tell the truth. So, with that in mind, don't need to measure too much, or don't need to try and measure, you know, how I've changed, how I'm, what I can hold on to, where I am now. It's unreliable. We can have those thoughts, but they're just thoughts of the self trying to measure itself. So the only thing that we can say about this, though, is that we have learnt things here, and they do need some protection. It is as if every time we go onto retreat, we plant and grow a small plant of our different view or a life perspective, and the plant is quite easily trodden on by the heavy boots of ordinary life, and the plant can often be crushed, so it needs a little protection. And the protection is, first of all, immediately after the retreat, to take things a little bit slowly. not to run off and answer 500 emails straight away. Just give it a bit of space, give it a little bit of time, give it some reflection. It's a time to walk in a garden somewhere in your house, reflecting on what you've been through, rather than immediately starting to telephone everybody and say, oh, I went to a fantastic retreat. And let it settle in. What?
Especially converting everyone.
Oh, yes. Just take it quietly, be reflective. That's wise. And keep the basic protection is a refuge, is to keep finding refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. And that's the best protection of our practice, and that is the best way of continuing the practice. And this refuge can mean many things for us. So the refuge in the Buddha can be, Buddha is Buddha mind, it means our consciousness. So anything that raises and expands our consciousness is taking refuge in the Buddha. And this can be going on more retreats, it can be periods of silence with ourselves, it can be ways in which we bring the practice into our ordinary life. This is taking refuge in the Buddha. It is our understanding that if we sit every morning, even half an hour, just sitting quietly, then we are changing the day. The day will look a bit different because we've started off in this Buddha mind, the mind of awareness, of reflection, of quiet, of steadiness, instead of straight away running, functioning, doing. So taking refuge in the Buddha can be our early morning practice, or it can be making sure that every day we walk in nature, or it can be exploring other forms of our meeting our consciousness, not Buddhist especially, but always in the direction of seeing clearly the depth, being aware, being free, being inside the truth of things. This will be taking refuge in the Buddha. Taking refuge in the Dharma would be actually always going for the truth, going for the intensity. You know, we don't need to sit in a cave for 3 weeks, like we were talking about my own experience. But Krishnamurti said meditation is intensity with silence. So it needs us to be a little intense about following the truth, and that will be taking refuge in the Dharma. What is the truth of things? What is the truth of my experience? What is what's really happening right now? I do not accept secondhand what I'm told. I want to explore the truth of things, the way things are. And this will be taking refuge in the Dharma. The truth of the way things are. I am not going to accept just what I hear or what I first think. I'm going to look more deeply. And this is a life journey. Etty Hillerson was doing this. She was really deeply concerned. It shouts at every line of her writing how she was really holding to the depth of the truth. And because of that, by the way, it's not in her diary, but the very touching message in the book that says there was a postcard found written by her that she threw out of the cattle truck on the way to Auschwitz, knowing that she was on her way to be killed And the postcard said, I am going singing. It was because of her love of truth was more important than anything that could happen. And the third is the refuge in the Sangha. And the Sangha is really an important power to make sure this small plant is protected and grown and fed. It's a really important resource. So please encourage you all to keep connecting with Sangha. Because Sangha is not a support group. Sangha is a group of others who are holding the view together. The view of the depth of the way things are, holding the Dharma view. So Sangha is important as a resource to keep reminding us of another way of looking at things and not getting drowned in the samsaric wheel of samsara. It's like we together can support each other in the view. And that's why we gather together, sit in groups and small evenings and listening to a teacher, reading something together. The Sangha is a real resource, so please do connect to Sangha wherever you are. And sometimes it doesn't need to be hugely exciting or dramatic or whatever, but if you have this understanding that it is about holding a view which is delicate, as I say, which is easily crushed, that's Sangha. It's a group of people that are able to hold a deeper view of things, which is easily squashed in the bulldozer of life. And then it encourages us to keep going with Sangha. Even it may not be so exciting or interesting, or we may be a bit tired, or it might be easier to turn on the TV instead of going out in the evening to a group, but it holds something very precious. So taking refuge in Sangha is important for us. And just remember this little story from A.J. Must, this man I told you about in the 60s with the candle that was sitting outside the Pentagon. This is us. This is why we need the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. Remember how he sat out there saying, you don't understand. I'm sitting so that they don't change me, not that I. So just remember that as an example of how we, in our own life, can sit wherever we are with a candle in a vigil saying, I am not going to be overwhelmed by the conventional views. I'm going to hold the truth of things that I see. And take some courage sometimes in the middle of all the society and the family and the work. But just sit there like this man, this brave man that sat with a candle and said, no, I'm sitting here so that they don't change me. There are lots of resources available. Anyone that wants can open my site has lots of talks. I think about 200 talks there on my site.
Written in Hebrew?
No.
You told me.
No. There's two sites. The Tovana site of the Israel Sangha is mostly in Hebrew, but my own site is in English and in Hebrew. Everything is in English, and some things are translated are in Hebrew. So there's many articles in English, and also 200 talks, of which indeed about 60 or 70 of them are in Hebrew, but then it's written, which are in Hebrew, and about 150 are in English. So the site is just my name, stephenfulder.com, one word. But if you're interested in the Israel Sangha, what it's doing, there is some part in English. There's there is some part of the site in English that you can look up, Tovana, T-O-V-A-N-A, which is the Hebrew word meaning insight.
You write it on the board.
All right, I'll write both of them on the board. And do read this. We're now in a beautiful position where there's endless reading materials and resources. In Germany, it's very, very available, which is very beautiful. And it's worth remembering that. So that's all I want to say, and Renata's going to carry on, and then really have it open for questions. Yeah. Happy to answer your questions.
You said a lot, and many beautiful, encouraging things. I feel I don't want to add too much. One thing at the beginning you said, I thought,
the ending in bliss. I'm not sure anymore. Are we end up in a different realm where there's no suffering? It seems like the suffering, the world I'm living in as long as I have this body, we'll be confronted with pain. That was one disenchantment I had at some point. Realizing this practice wouldn't take me to another plane of existence, at least as long as I don't leave this body. But I will keep encountering people who are not so nice to me, not so kind to me. And it's not because my practice is wrong, but because the world is as it is. And coming to a peace with even that, coming to peace with that the world is as it is, as we know it, as tragic it might be. It just reminded me of the Bodhisattva vow. I don't know whether you know it, and I cannot quite recall it, but it's something like, I know the pain is endless, I still try to end it. So instead of saying, oh, this, if it is the world as it is and it seems like an endless thing, I will not just dive into despair and say, well, then, I just drop any try to make a change. But I will make the change as much as I can, the position where I am, and it will make a difference to this being, to my being, to the beings around me. And there was a story about a young Indian boy at the sea, and there were these animals, a seagurker. What's a seagurker, huh? They kind of living in the sea, they're this long, and they don't have anything to move. They just washed on the shore, and they were dying there. And there was this little boy, and there were hundreds of them. Hundreds of them were washed on the shore and dying there. And there was this little boy taking each one of those and threw them back in, that they would stay alive. And there was this man coming and saying to the boy, why are you doing that? Can't you see there are millions of them? What can you do to make that change? And he said, well, it will make a difference to this one. And he threw it back to the sea. And it's just so beautiful, So even if it feels like not much what we can do, first of all, we never know what kind of ripples that will take. And even if it doesn't have much effect on our environment, it will make a difference to this moment. So taking it from this and to do what we can is wonderful. And there was some specific emphasis coming out of the theme of this retreat, which is part of the Dharma, but still was emphasizing certain things. And one most important seems for me is like we've been really exploring how certain events developed in this case, very events of the past were shaping certain views, and that is happening all the time. Events are happening, a view is arising, and this view is not just limited to this event, it carries on to and is carried on to other events, other people, other situations. We come in with a prejudice, and from that prejudice we start to relate, and that can be a very, so we relate to it as it is a truth, rather than knowing it's just my view I'm bringing in, but I don't really know. And it's so important to differentiate the two. I think we all got aware of that, we're holding that, and we're often not aware of that we are holding this view, we're holding this prejudice. We're getting aware of it when we meet the situation, like you're from Israel, you met the Germans, and suddenly you're aware how afraid you are of Germans. Even we don't we don't hold a grudge at all. And I'm as a German, I got aware how afraid I'm of the Israeli, you know. So unless I'm actually entering such a situation, I wasn't aware of that. So in that moment I can liberate that view. If I have that understanding and bring it into the situation that this is just a view, this is not the truth. And that's such an important wisdom we have just here as a group has discovered. And I think it really, we can make an effort to deepen that understanding. Because when we go back, it might be that our environment tells us, no, this is the truth. Are you stupid? You know, they might be, if we just go out and you say, no, this is just views, this is not the truth, you know. They might not have that insight, they might not have that exposure, so it might be difficult for them to get that, but still we have to keep watering that small plant we have planted here. And we can see the same thing happening with all in other situations, you know, with Arabs, with people of Islamic belief. I mean, we are developing that in the West at the moment, you know, every person who is believing, you know, in having an Islamic faith, you know, is a potential terrorist. Well, we are cultivating this at this moment. I can see that's happening. We're cultivating fear, and so we can see that in many ways. And can we instead of following that, we notice, oh, this is a view, this is not the truth. And another one which stands out for me is the clearing of guilt again and again by practicing this practice of forgiveness. It's like cleansing a plate, you know, acknowledging where we are unskillful to ourselves, acknowledging where we are unskillful to others. Not blaming ourselves all the time, but rather acknowledging it and asking for forgiveness inside, maybe outside, but also very much inside, and dropping that burden again. And the same extending forgiveness to others. So cleansing our relationships, and this takes time. And it needs practice in the small events, you know. There are so many times we have an opportunity for this in the small things. Can we forgive our partner for having forgotten the cup of standing somewhere where it's not supposed to be, you know? So can we forgive someone for getting an appointment? Can we forgive ourselves to having been forgotten the breath or whatever? And so many ways we can cultivate that attitude. And it's a beautiful thing if you do it for a while. That's why I put out the sheets on forgiveness, just to make it a habit of mind. That's something which came to mind to encourage you, if you like. This is all I at the moment want to add, and So I'm very grateful to you all taking this into the world in whatever way you will make an impact. So maybe you got some questions to us, something concern you hold, and or something you'd like to share as an inspiration for others, be also fine.
Can we stay more?
It'd be nice, huh? Yes, I feel like to.
You can stay all your life. It's entirely up to you.
Maybe you can stay in our hearts. That would be nice. Yeah.
Tasha found this morning that we easily fall into the trap of however small our actions are, what we do in our immediate environment, we lose track or we don't see what many other people in many other places do, playing it down or becoming sad because it's so little I can personally do. But there are so many people in so many places shaping the change as well, and I should just comment on that. That you keep that in mind wherever you are.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not just us.
It's not just us.
Yes. I was thinking yesterday when you were talking about Dana, there's this town, a city called Braunschweig. You were going to pass it on your way to Wuppertal on the train.
Mm.
And it's since some years, there's a person who's donating money anonymously, nobody knows who it is, at night, and slips envelopes with hundreds, thousands of money of euro into people's letterboxes for organizations or even personal. And it's starting to change the city. It's starting to spread, people start to give more, people are more kind. It's amazing what he does. I read this on the paper of the train. So it was so touching. Braunschweig. it's a city of, you know, it's nothing special. It's not a special city. Why Braunschweig? And that person wants to stay anonymous, and police doesn't go after him by purpose. Oh, it's an active decision, and people report what he does, you know. So it's so beautiful. And just telling that, you know, I don't know how you feel. I feel tears coming to my eyes. It's so beautiful. There's a lot doing.
I have been feeling like this gathering is a touchstone, a very beautiful touchstone. And I was thinking, well, okay, once I leave, then what? And then this morning, I realized that each step after this is another touchstone.
Mm-hmm.
And each of you has been a way for me to realize that. So I'm so grateful that this gathering could take place, and I also feel like this is just the beginning too. I just sense that more and more human beings are gonna gather and be able to touch their pain and their suffering in a way that actually includes other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I also had an idea, and I think it's going to sound probably naive to you all, but I thought, why not make a mindfulness retreat for neo-Nazi youth of today. Because I thought, these are people who, they have their views, just like I do. And I don't think they've probably ever been invited to sit together. And they probably don't know very many of the people who they think they hate.
Mm.
So I don't know exactly how that would be approached, because I've never had a neo-Nazi over for dinner. But I think there's... I would imagine that anyone in this room had someone with those views over for dinner, that they would change their view a little bit. So I'm going to ponder it, and if any of you have any ideas about how to reach out to these folks, I think it would be a good thing to do. And regarding, you know, in Israel, there's both peoples think there are people within, or there are views within both peoples thinking that the other one is an aggressor or a victim back and forth. And we've seen that it's very easy for those views to be penetrated and taken apart. There are many, many Palestinian and Israeli folks who are meeting and gathering, even though the larger dialogue that the media puts out there and the government puts out there is a different view.
Mm.
So it's going on, and I believe that it's going to continue to go on. So may we not subscribe to the mass media, as you pointed out, and may we keep this alive. So thanks for making it. Thanks for all the work you did to make it happen. Thanks to you all.
Just one thing.
I'm just, my Germanness is arising. We have a timetable and a structure. We are just about to leave the structure. So I'm fine.
No.
We're moving into the theme of the closing circle. I'm just aware of that. You see? Stephen, I want that from you. It will make life so much easier for me.
It's a very, it's kind of a very sweet process to watch that if someone's taking care of more the exactness of things, then I can fall back into the looseness. And if I fall back into the looseness, someone can then look after the exactness and take on. It's a dynamic process. We're taking on the. It's the joy of teaching together. It's been really lovely, a lovely experience. The energy of the two of us interacting and teaching together. It's been so yeah, maybe we'll focus just a few more minutes on any specific questions.
Or ideas, you know, to bring this into.
Yeah. It's not very exact, but.
I want to ask something. When I got here, I had only the view about the Holocaust from the Jewish side. And yesterday I was sitting at the kitchen and I was looking out the window and the darkness started to take over, and I imagined myself a German woman at the war, sitting in her house and watching the beautiful garden. Watching the outside and seeing the world and thinking about her children and her husband and the funerals and the and I thought it amazing how I can see both sides clearly now. And I'm thinking, how can I take it with me in all in every situation where I meet the other, and how automatically I can see his and me the same, and we talked about it. Something I want so much to take with me, to be able to see always myself and the other means also. I feel like there is a big or a huge space in my heart that has become bigger, and I think maybe that. Like I make a room in my heart to the other, and I want to stay with that feeling and be able to
How did you get to that place?
Don't know. I mean, by doing that in that sitting with him, and in the both sides that I was going to the camp with the people who suffered from the other side, but I can go also with the other side.
Yeah, it's very beautiful what you said. We're all touched, I think, by what you say. And I think that there is one good way of one help we have here. Imagine that you're in a situation where you don't feel bad, where your heart is contracted and you feel me, Dana, and then, especially, it doesn't matter when, Doesn't matter where, wherever you are. And it often can be happen when there is fear. That Tel Aviv, you know, then suddenly you're afraid. And it can happen. If you can just at that moment see that that contraction and feel that contraction has with it pain. It has pain of the world closing down. And the openness that you feel is joyful, is free. So as it, the sign, the litmus paper, Nialakos, you say, the test is you can check it because it will be painful for you. And so if you feel that pain of the contracted heart, it's a sign that your heart is being contracted. And then that tells you, and then immediately you can open it again. So in a way, the pain is a good teacher for us, for you. So when you feel, if you feel contraction, feel it's painful to be in that place, and you remember then to open up. And just to keep that movement, remembering that to be with the other is also to be less obsessed with yourself. So the two go together. As much as you can reduce the self loops inside yourself, me, what I need, what I like, what I have to have, my life, as much as you can reduce, you know, you can soften that, naturally you will, your heart will be out there to others. So the two go together.
And what we've practiced here, that deep listening, you know, for the moment being able and to remind myself doing that, dropping my story and listen to the other. And just trying to really take that in and not say they're wrong, you know. This is how you got to that place. And you were willing to drop your story for a moment and just listen what the others are saying. And that we can keep practicing all the time. You know, there's someone else and likes something else. Just some simple other food. And just drop the idea, oh, this food is bad. It's not tasty because I don't like it. It's to say, oh, it's obviously tasty to someone else. And have that space that things can be different for other people. This is it's so small, but it's not obvious to most people. We say the food is good, and we see it that way. Rather say, oh, I like it. I don't like it, but someone else likes it. You know, and have that space and develop that understanding, that view, that things are not one way in themselves. It's often about our relation, you know. So, and we can develop that in many ways, that deep listening, this listening to someone else has a different view on the world. It's their views, and the views can often stand just beside each other. It's individual truth. And that way you develop that. I mean, that's what I like to add to what, and the contraction tells you, oh, I'm stuck in one view, you know. And then taking care first of my fear, acknowledging the fear, acknowledging the anger I might feel, the hurt, the pain. I mean, it needs that acknowledgement too, and then be carefully cradling that, like we did yesterday, cradling that and holding it. And then comes the point where it opens again. And it, in a sense, there are not that many things, many steps to do, but you have to go through them all over and over again, and then it becomes natural. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm sure you knew that. That's why I asked you. It was just in that moment out of your mind, but you simply found that. Beautiful.
We'd like to meet in the library after this session for some reflection on what we can do over there, including Ayala, if that's okay with you. Welcome.
Okay. So, yeah, you can hear.